40. Saboteur. The scooter had been stripped of all unnecessary equipment. It was now merely an open framework holding together propulsion, guidance, and life support systems. Even the seat for the second pilot had been removed, for every kilogram of extra mass had to be paid for in mission time. That was one of the reasons, though not the most important, why Rodrigo had insisted on going alone. It was such a simple job that there was no need for extra hands, and the mass of a passenger would cost several minutes of flight time. Now the stripped-down scooter could accelerate at over a third of a gravity. It could make the trip from Endeavour to the bomb in 4 minutes. That left 6 to spare. It should be sufficient. Rodrigo looked back only once when he had left the ship. He saw that, as planned, it had lifted from the central axis and was thrusting gently away across the spinning disk of the north face. By the time he reached the bomb, it would have placed the thickness of Rama between them. He took his time flying over the polar plain. There was no hurry here, because the bomb's cameras could not yet see him, and he could therefore conserve fuel. Then he drifted over the curving rim of the world, and there was the missile, glittering in sunlight, fiercer even than that shining on the planet of its birth. Rodrigo had already punched in the guidance instructions. Now he initiated the sequence, and the scooter spun on its gyros and came up to full thrust in a matter of seconds. At first, the sensation of weight seemed crushing. Then Rodrigo adjusted to it. He had, after all, comfortably endured twice as much inside Rama, and had been born under 3 times as much on Earth. The huge, curving exterior wall of the 50-kilometer cylinder was slowly falling away beneath him as the scooter aimed itself directly at the bomb. Yet it was impossible to judge Rama's size, since it was completely smooth and so lacking in features that it was difficult to tell that it was spinning. 100 seconds into the mission, he was approaching the halfway point. The bomb was too far away to show any details, but it was much brighter against the jet-black sky. It was strange to see no stars, not even brilliant Earth or dazzling Venus. The dark filters which protected his eyes against the deadly glare made that impossible. Rodrigo guessed that he was breaking a record. Probably no other man had ever engaged in extravehicular work so close to the sun. It was lucky for him that solar activity was low. At 2:10, the flip-over light started flashing, thrust dropped to zero, and the scooter spun through 180 degrees. Full thrust was back in an instant, but now he was decelerating at the same mad rate of 3 meters per second squared. Rather better than that, in fact, since he had lost almost half his propellant mass. The bomb was 25 kilometers away. He would be there in another 2 minutes. He had hit a top speed of 1,500 kilometers per hour, which, for a space scooter, was utter insanity, and probably another record. But this was hardly a routine EVA, and he knew precisely what he was doing. The bomb was growing, and now he could see the main antenna holding steady on the invisible star of Mercury. Along that beam, the image of his approaching scooter had been flashing at the speed of light for the last 3 minutes. There were still 2 to go before it reached Mercury. What would the Hermians do when they saw him? There would be consternation, of course. They would realize instantly that he had made a rendezvous with the bomb several minutes before they even knew he was on the way. Probably some standby observer would call higher authority. That would take more time. But even in the worst possible case, even if the officer on duty had authority to detonate the bomb and pressed the button immediately, it would take another 5 minutes for the signal to arrive. Though Rodrigo was not gambling on it, Cosmo Christers never gambled. He was quite sure that there would be no such instantaneous reaction. The Hermians would hesitate to destroy a reconnaissance vehicle from Endeavor, even if they suspected its motives. They would certainly attempt some form of communication first, and that would mean more delay. And there was an even better reason. They would not waste a gigaton bomb on a mere scooter. Wasted it would be if it was detonated 20 kilometers from its target. They would have to move it first. Oh, he had plenty of time. But he would continue to assume the worst. He would act as if the triggering impulse were going to arrive in the shortest possible time, just 5 minutes. As the scooter closed in across the last few hundred meters, Rodrigo quickly matched the details he could now see with those he had studied in the photographs taken at long range. What had been only a collection of pictures became hard metal and smooth plastic, no longer abstract, but a deadly reality. The bomb was a cylinder about 10 meters long and 3 in diameter, by a strange coincidence, almost the same proportions as those of Rama. It was attached to the framework of the carrier vehicle by an open latticework of short I-beams. For some reason, probably to do with the location of the center of mass, it was supported at right angles to the axis of the carrier, so that it conveyed an appropriately sinister hammerhead impression. It was indeed a hammer, one powerful enough to smash a world. From each end of the bomb, a bundle of braided cables ran along the cylindrical side and disappeared through the latticework into the interior of the vehicle. All communication and control was here. There was no antenna of any kind on the bomb itself. Rodrigo had only to cut those 2 sets of cables, and there would be nothing left but harmless, inert metal. Although this was exactly what he had expected, it seemed a little too easy. He glanced at his watch. It would be another 30 seconds before the Hermians, even if they had been watching when he rounded the edge of Rama, could know of his existence. He had an absolutely certain 5 minutes for uninterrupted work, and a 99% probability of much longer than that. As soon as the scooter had drifted to a complete halt, Rodrigo grappled it to the missile framework so that the two formed a rigid structure. That took only seconds. He had already chosen his tools and was out of the pilot's seat at once, only slightly hampered by the stiffness of his heavy insulation suit. The first thing he found himself inspecting was a small metal plate bearing this inscription: Department of Power Engineering, Section D, 47 Sunset Boulevard, Vulcanopolis, 17464. For information, apply to Henry K. Jones. Rodrigo suspected that in a very few minutes, Mr. Jones might be rather busy. The heavy wire cutters made short work of the cable. As the first strands parted, Rodrigo gave scarcely a thought to the fires of hell that were pent up only centimeters away. If his actions triggered them, he would never know. He glanced again at his watch. This had taken less than a minute, which meant that he was on schedule. Now for the backup cable, and then he could head for home, in full view of the furious and frustrated Hermians. He was just beginning to work on the second cable assembly when he felt a faint vibration in the metal he was touching. Startled, He looked back along the body of the missile. The characteristic blue-violet glow of a plasma thruster in action was hovering around one of the attitude control jets. The bomb was preparing to move.